The gang is back. It's the Fan pregame, Sportsnet, Sportsnet 590. The Fan, Justin, back, tanned and refreshed. And
I am tanned.
All caught up. Yeah, I look like a ghost. Don't put us on a split screen at the same time, all right? It's going to scare the viewers. We're pregame and
I do like the contrast. You're right.
Nice. It's not nice. It's unfortunate for me. It's 19 degrees, though. I'm going to get out there and get some vitamin D. We're pregaming Wednesday Night Hockey tonight on the network after us. We got Nashville and Winnipeg. Later on, Edmonton and Washington, Ovi and McDavid. And Shane O'Brien from the Miss and Curfew podcast is going to join us shortly to talk about all this and that playoff picture, which is shaking out nicely.
Speaking of sunshine, the Blue Jays ran out something that could be considered an opening day lineup this afternoon at Dunedin. Vlad Jr. returning after a couple days away, 1-for-2 on the afternoon. We'll have Alana Rizzo of the MLB Network joining us in about a half hour. We'll talk a little Vlad, a little Votto, and what Gerrit Cole's injury might mean for the New York Yankees.
I also saw that the Dome was open today. They're just getting some fresh air in there.
Drying things out a little bit?
Yeah, well, today's 19 degrees. We might as well.
But that's like, that could open things up for, you know, some leaks, right?
No, it's time to let those new seats breathe.
Okay.
Players Championship kicks off tomorrow. We're going to have some best bets.
And the Leafs signed Bobby McMahon to an extension, and you've been waiting to say this.
Bobby McStension!
No, you messed it up. McExtension.
No, you have to blur it into
Oh, you're blurring extension. It? Okay, I won't critique
I
your,
made it up.
You did make it up.
Okay.
And you nailed it.
And I did nail it. Thanks for that. All right, before we bring in Shane O'Brien, this is the biggest news of the day. Vladimir Guerrero Jr. talked to our very own Hazel May down in Dunedin. They're going to have, obviously, their pre-season sit-downs. We don't want to take away from what Hazel will have to share for us on Sportsnet, but she did tweet this out, so it's fair game. Just finished our annual season opening sit-down conversations. Vladdy Guerrero Jr. shared he'd like the home run jacket to return. It's personal. If the team wants to join in, great, but he wants to, quote, have fun with it. He'll also take part in any slash all other dugout celebrations. And I am so for this. The Blue Jays need to bring fun back. They need to have joyous celebrations. They want to hit home runs. Make there be a reward. I want to see the home run jacket back. I want to see something of that sort in the new dugouts for the Blue Jays. I am so happy that Vladdy is using Hazel's platform to share that message.
Yeah, I mean, I'm actually fine with the, like, I'm not anti-home run jacket. However, should this be the stance Vladimir Guerrero Jr. should be taking right now?
You don't know what the interview was. Maybe that was just a passing comment, and Hazel knew that we would love to talk about it.
But he wants it back, right? Like, that's what he's saying right now.
What would you like him to say? Oh, I never want to see that thing again.
I would like the person who was maybe most at fault, if we're doing culpability rankings for last year, to be maybe worried about other things than what you celebrate with after you hit a home run.
And maybe he is in the interview. But and I bet he is. Snippet is juicy enough to talk
about. And I bet he is, and we're probably radioing Hazel to a certain extent.
You are.
Well, it's a fair game. It's what he said. It's what he wants. It's what he's interested in this year that he wants to see the Blue Jays have happen. So it's, again, fair game. And there's other things, I'm sure, to the interview. But if this is his hardline stance, this is what we need for me to be back. And again, I'm
taking it a little too serious, Justin. Have some fun. You're back on from vacation.
I am, but I know if you were in this position and if I was in this position and I was, again, number one culpability rankings last year, would I be coming in with this, banging this drum right now? Probably not. And I know you wouldn't either.
I hope it's the start of a quote that we see when Vladdy hits 50 bombs. I mean, look back at Hazel's tweet and he goes, I wanted the home run back, the jacket back, and he got it. Nonetheless, I just wanted to open up to discussion to our viewers and our listeners. If the Blue Jays bring something back, maybe they need to recycle the jacket idea, but maybe there's something different. Maybe there's a fresh start for this team. What can Canada's team, Blue Jays fandom, what can we drum up here in terms of a home run celebration? There's a lot of really good ones in MLB. Seattle's got the trident. Detroit had the hockey helmet. Baltimore's got the chain. There's the samurai, which not sure if that's going to travel with the Dodgers or not. There's the Viking helmet. There's the catcher's mask. There's the gladiator mask, the cheese head, the home run sword, the marlin chain, the fishing pole, the colonial wig and flag, which is one of my favorites. There's the big hat. I think we need something Canadian. I think what we should have is moose antlers.
Okay.
Shout out Moose Winooski's.
So in addition to the home run jacket.
No, if they pick something new.
Okay.
Maybe the home run jacket is too spicy for whoever didn't want it. Just throw on some moose antlers.
It's too much of a contentious topic, the home run jacket.
The moose antlers is perfect. We're Canada's team. We're the only one here. Why don't we lean into it? Get a little beaver tail smacking in the background and we're ready.
There's two parts to this costume.
It's a full costume. Tell me that the moose antlers isn't a great idea.
I would prefer the home run jacket, which, I mean, again, I'm not against it. The moose antlers, fine, whatever. Do whatever you want. It's not as good as the trident, though, in Seattle.
Well, yeah, but this is our trident.
Two
tridents off the top of the head.
Did we not learn lessons from the Maple Leafs in the song?
What song?
Just the goal song that we talked about for years. Which one is correct? Mm-hmm. If you need the jacket back, Vladdy, if that's what's going to change things, then just do the jacket again. But then if it doesn't turn things around, what are we going to be talking about next spring training?
Well, maybe there won't be one next spring training.
Oh, and I'm the downer.
Disband it. But I think we should open the text line 590-590, tweet us, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But I want to open it up. We already have a great one, a raccoon hat. That is so Toronto. I see one every day when I take Bunker out for a walk.
They can jump in a dumpster if you want to do the full raccoon thing.
Just put the little raccoon hat on. It's such a good idea. Okay. We've got moose antlers. Oh, lots of support for moose antlers. Thank you. I think we found something here. I liked the jacket, though, because they had all the different, like, multicultural elements to the team. Everyone got their names. You've got, you know, the barrio. It was really cool. It was different. And I think that if it's still living somewhere and hasn't been thrown out,
that's a good question.
If it's not a Goodwill somewhere.
Where is the jacket?
If
you had to guess where the jacket is right now, where do you think the jacket is? Because if they gave up on the jacket, did someone just like quietly store in the closet just in case they wanted to bring it back out?
Like under the new
bleachers. Did Vladdy take it home with him because it was Vladdy's?
If he did, he should look at it every day and just be like, give me one home run here in the playoffs. None of this matters, though, if the Blue Jays can't perform. And I understand this is a small little thing. It's a fun thing to talk about. But the Blue Jays need to be better offensively. We know that. We can't score 1-0 runs in the playoff series. But maybe this just brings, like, a lightness back to the team. Everyone else is doing it. Why can't we?
Again, I mean, it's the thing is, it's so much, it's insignificant. It's trivial in every single way, right? A jacket's something you celebrate with. Mm-hmm. But it did mark like, hey, this is who we want to be now. And for that reason, we're not doing this anymore.
And they got rid of some of those people that enjoyed that energy, like Teo.
100%. Part of the barrio was broken up, mm-hmm. right? That was one of the themes going into last year. And if you decide, hey, this is not what we're all about anymore, and then you bring it back and like, oh, we made a mistake. We are about that. We need to have fun again if we're going to score runs with the Toronto Blue Jays. It is kind of a disconnect. Mm-hmm. So like bringing it back is fine. Everyone will embrace it, I'm sure, except maybe a couple guys who weren't really into it.
Yeah, you.
I mean, more specifically, guys on the team that aren't really into it because they probably wouldn't have got rid of it if there was unanimous approval for it.
Mm-hmm.
But again, if you symbolically get rid of it because you're trying to be something else and you abandon that after a failed season, then aren't you just kind of searching for your identity still?
The Blue Jays' identity is really what they're going to put on the field, which was strong pitching. Hopefully we're going to get more into this. Alana Rizzo will join us. Big questions here with the Yankees, of course. Gerrit Cole going to be out for 1 to 2 months. At this point, they're going to figure out what's going on with his elbow. So that's a big opportunity for the Blue Jays. I mean, Gerrit Cole, if he's no longer playing for the first little bit, they've got a gauntlet to start this season. We still got to figure out what's going on with Gausman.
Mm-hmm.
He seems like he'll be okay, but he might take a little bit of time. Manoa, basically still thrown on solid ground, flat ground at least. So lots more important questions for the Blue Jays, but we'll kick our show off with a little fun. You can send it in 590-590. We're getting lots of exciting texts in the text line. We'll sprinkle those in a little bit throughout the show. But let's bring in Shane O'Brien of the Missing Curfew podcast. Shane, how's it going? Thanks so much for jumping on.
Good. Thanks for having me. You guys actually caught me mid-IV. I'm getting an IV. I'm heading on a golf trip. So, bear with me here.
So this is a pre. This is a measure before you go on the trip? This isn't like mid-trip?
This is
post-trip?
Yeah, no. I was in Vegas Saturday night for the Vegas Golden Knights Red Wings game, mm-hmm. and I'm leaving tomorrow for a golf trip. So this is precautionary. I can show you here. I'm at the hydration room and taking care of myself.
Yeah. There you go. That stuff works, eh?
That's unbelievable.
Never tried that.
You need that. Justin it's just came back changer. From vacation.
I probably would have had a better opening 10 minutes if I had done that earlier today. Okay, so let's start. It was a busy night on the network. A lot of good NHL games, a lot of good teams that are in action on the network. And I want to start, well, since we're on the theme of Vegas, I mean, the Nashville Predators were supposed to have something of a party in Vegas, or at least go to a U2 show about a month ago, and it got canceled because Barry Trotz and Andrew Brunette were not happy about their play. Since then, they've accumulated 22 of 24 possible points, excuse me, most goals, best goal differential, genuinely playing like a top team. So I'll ask you, former pro, obviously, when punishment comes down like that, does it always work? Does it always work to this effect? Is this the sort of tact that you would expect to work on an NHL team?
No, actually, you know what? Next time I see Barry Trotz, I'm going to have a little chit-chat with Barry. I played for Barry when I was in Nashville. And listen, obviously, you know, Vegas is a special city to go into. And for Barry Trotz and Andrew Brunette to pull the plug on something like that, where those boys really wanted to go to it, they must have saw something in the way they were playing, because both those guys are old school, unbelievable people. And it's obviously worked. You know, I picked Nashville to make the playoffs at the start of the year for the lone fact that they brought Ryan O'Reilly in. I love the guy that much. I know what he does on a day-to-day basis. I know how he can change the culture of a dressing room. And right now they're playing at the perfect time. So as much as I don't like Barry Trotz and Brunette canceling the spear U2 on the boys, it's paid off.
Maybe you need a little motivation to get the boys in line. You were just in Vegas, so perfect time to ask you about the Golden Knights. They're just doing what they want to do business-wise, kind of shamelessly. You know, we'll do whatever we need to do to win. They add Mantha Hanifin and Hurdle there at the trade deadline. I feel like you are the type of guy that might respect this hustle, right? Like, just go out there and win cups and don't take nothing from no one.
Yeah, I do love it. You know, first of all, I'm not a huge fan of the hard salary cap, and we don't need to get into that. We don't have a long enough segment here with me. But, you know, a team like the Toronto Maple Leafs, I feel a little bit for Brad Treliving, right? When you're up against the salary cap and, you know, you make the most money in the league and you just can't go out and do anything. But that's for a different conversation. But, yes, listen, as an ex-player, if you're a fan of the Vegas Golden Knights, if you're in that dressing room, Bill Foley, Kelly McCrimmon, George McPhee, you have to tip their hat to them. Like it, don't like it. It is what it is. They found their way around, you know, the hard cap. And I know for a fact that Stone is hurt seriously, so it's not like they're trying to cheat here. But as a player, when you're in that dressing room and they make those moves, it gets you fired up.
Yeah, and I guess the same can be said for the Colorado Avalanche, and we got the O'Brien Bowl in many ways on the network tonight, Canucks and Avalanche regionally. I want to ask you about both, but we'll start with Colorado. I mean, this is a pretty significant remake, bringing in a bunch of new players and supporting, obviously, a team that won a Stanley Cup 2 years ago. In terms of teams that upgraded, are they at the top of the line for you?
Yeah, I think so. Listen, I didn't want to see Bo Byram leave town. I love him. You can obviously see the impression he's already made for the Buffalo Sabres. And I get it. You got to give something up to get something. And Casey Mittelstaff, you know, he's a good player, scored his first one last night against Calgary. I love the size they added up front. I thought, if anything, they were still a little undersized up front, and they went out and brought in two big boys and helped their depth out. So I think they're ready to rock. My boy Landeskog is skating. We don't know what's going to happen there. First and foremost, he's got a long career after this, so you don't want to hurry it. But if somehow they could, you know, inject him into the lineup, I love what they did at the deadline, though.
Yeah, that would be an incredible boost to that locker room if they were able to make those additions and then bring back their captain. The other side of that game, obviously, Vancouver Canucks. Thatcher Demko now week to week with an injury after going out over the weekend. I mean, this is not maybe the goaltender that's relied on most across the NHL, but he would be somewhat high on that list. Vancouver pretty, not home and clear in the Pacific Division, but a pretty strong lead there, and it may dwindle a little bit, but can it have a bigger effect if you're just not playing your best hockey because, well, you frankly don't have your best goaltender available in the month leading up to the playoffs?
Yeah, that's a big loss for them. You know, I've already taken the Avalanche in the game tonight, so I did not know Thatcher Demko was out. So thank you for that little tidbit. That makes me feel a little bit better. But, you know, there's a reason why at the start of the season you want to bank these points, right? You want to get off to a good start, but stuff like this happens. You never know what's going to happen. Like you said, the Vancouver Canucks are sitting in a very, very good position in the Pacific Division and in the NHL. We don't know how long Thatcher Demko will be out, but let's say he's out for a couple of weeks, like you said, and things don't go their way. That's why you try to bank as many points as you can early in the season. If stuff like this happens in the playoffs, you're not up against it. You know where you sit, and you can weather a little, you know, 3 or 4 game skiff that happens. Not say it's going to, but that's why you bank points as much as you can throughout the season.
We're chatting with Shane O'Brien of the Missing Curfew podcast. I want to ask you about Matt Rempe. Man, like, what a hot start to an NHL career. Of course, seeing though he got suspended for 4 games. I wonder, like, how that works in terms of being a young kid trying to make your name in the NHL, being a guy that's willing and maybe too willing to take on fights, and then letting that physicality maybe get a bit too far. Suspended for 4 games. You think this was the end of, like, the Rempe mania that we're seeing, and how a young guy is trying to find his footing in an NHL career when he's a pretty physical guy?
Rempe mania. I like that. He might have to make that T-shirt. He should make it.
Running wild.
No, listen, I love what the kid has done. It's not easy to come into the NHL, even though he is 6'8", and get in fights like he had. You know, I didn't love what he did the other night with Curtis McDermott. Mm-hmm. I'm the biggest Matt Rempe fan ever, but when they make a trade and he comes into your rink, it's Rangers Devils, I thought he should answer the bell there. And as for the hit, there's no room in the game for that. I hope he learns from it. But he's a rookie that's just starting to get paychecks, and he just got dinged 4 games. So that is really going to hurt his wallet. That may teach him to keep his elbows down.
Speaking of fights, Lucas Raymond and Ben Chiarot seemed to go at it just a little bit, or attempted to, at least at Red Wings practice a little bit earlier in the day. They are in a free fall right now, the Red Wings. You might have missed a little bit, Shane, given that you're a little busy on the weekend. But yeah, the Red Wings not in a good spot right now. When you see two teammates start to fight at practice, or something like that happens at practice, what does it usually say about a team and the team's state in that current moment?
Yeah, no, I watched them play live Saturday night against Vegas. You know, I think they've lost, what, now 6 in a row. Dylan Larkin, their captain's been out of the lineup. There's no secret what their record is with him in the lineup and without the lineup. Listen, I've been there. Willie Mitchell and Ryan Kessler got in a fight. Mason Raymond and Willie Mitchell got in a fight where I came flying in to defend Mason Raymond. When you're on a good team and you have expectations that the Detroit Red Wings have to make the playoffs, and 2 weeks ago they were sitting in a playoff spot pretty comfortably before the Islanders went on a run here. I love the passion. I love that, you know, Ben Chiarot and Lucas Raymond, one of their star players, are battling in front of the net. You have to be upset this time of year when you're losing and you can see the Stanley Cup playoffs slipping out of your fingers. There better be emotion in practice every day.
Shane, if I'm not mistaken, you followed the Stanley Cup final pretty closely last year. I think you were traveling back and forth. So you know the Panthers, you know how good Vegas is, you know how good Florida is, of course. But Panthers may be coming back stronger than Vegas did. They've definitely been more consistent. They've definitely not lost as much from an injury standpoint. Not putting your words in your mouth and saying, hey, they're the best team in the league. But when you look at this Panthers team, do you feel strongly about their ability to get back and win it this time?
I do. I think Carolina made some great moves at the deadline. Like we said about the Avalanche, Vegas, they all made great moves in the West. The West is going to be, it's going to be a gauntlet to get through the West. We know that there's 4 or 5 teams there that could win the Western Conference. I do believe the Florida Panthers are the best team right now. I think they got better depth. I think Oliver Ekman-Larsson and Dmitry Kulikov have came there. The nice vitamin D has rejuvenated their career. I think Bobrovsky has been, the way he played the playoffs, he's been like that all season long. And I think my boy Matty Tkachuk has a chip on his shoulder that everybody in the league can see. And if you don't love Paul Maurice, then I think you're watching the wrong sport, because that guy is old school, absolute beauty, and says all the right things. And they can play the game any way they want to play it. Now they have to stay healthy and things like that. But I love what the Florida Panthers are doing.
Before we say bye, I got to give a Port Hope shout out. My parents live in Port Hope. I know you're a Port Hope guy, so... That's a lot of Port Hope for one TV show, you know. It's a good spot, a good hamlet.
That's awesome. Yeah, the old Port Hope, the Ganaraska River, is a pretty beautiful little town.
It's a nice spot.
Yeah, so it's always good when Port Hope gets some love. So thank you.
Yeah, of course. We thank you, Port Hope Strong. Appreciate you coming on, Shane. Enjoy your trip and get that IV cooking. You got lots coming up. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Shane O'Brien of the Missing Curfew podcast.
They do drip IV in Port Hope?
Not a chance.
No. Might be a good business venture then.
I don't think many people in Port Hope are partying like Shane O'Brien.
I mean,
it's more of a retirement community at this point.
I don't know what happened over the weekend. I don't know what's going to happen for him upcoming this weekend. But preparation, I mean, it's key in sports.
That's the thing.
And he's IVs. Understanding I need to be at my best in more ways than one, I'm sure, for what's to come on this golf trip. And he's putting himself in a good position.
The glasses were to hide a little bit of a late night.
It may have never stopped.
I think it was kind of a style. It was kind of like a...
Yeah, it's possible.
A little bit of Jersey Shore.
Might have to get him on after that trip.
See how he's doing there. Yeah, we got some big ones tonight. Edmonton, Washington later on Sportsnet 1. Ovi's still cooking at a pretty good pace against McDavid tonight. Mm-hmm. Nashville, as you were mentioning, so they don't get to go to the Sphere, and then everything changes.
You believe, 12 games ago. So you believe, like a full month.
Are you buying into the coach plays the card of, you know, you guys can't have fun. You got to earn it. And then they go out there and they earn it.
Yeah, I think they gave up 9 the game before.
It was
they
pretty
officially
bad.
Got it canceled. And Elliot Friedman reported that on a Saturday headlines. And they've basically not stopped since. Their only losses coming in overtime or a shootout. So they got a point in every game. 0 regulation losses. 22 of 24 points. Mm-hmm. Pretty unbelievable. And they not only like saved their season, maybe saved the reputation of some guys. I'm not even sure how far you can really go there. But, you know, they may have rerouted where they were headed. I mean, this could have been a team selling off the deadline. Then they win a bunch of games in a row. And now they could do what I'm not saying a lot of people would want to see. And there would be more to it than that. But they're not one of the teams that, you know, a Vegas Golden Knights team was necessarily thinking about.
That's right.
A month ago when, you know, you're jockeying for position inside the Pacific Division. The Kings are on the come up. Nashville, after this run, is pretty safe as well. But when you look around, there's no margin of error for a team like Vegas who went out there and moved mountains in order to get better. At least it doesn't seem like they have to move mountains. They just get it done. But yeah, it's not as certain for a team like Vegas that went all in because of a performance from a Nashville team that wasn't supposed to necessarily be where they're at right now. And I guess you could say the same about who they're playing tonight with the Winnipeg Jets, despite them being strong all year. They're kind of a team that's maybe punching above their weight to a certain extent, or at least performing better than a lot of people had hoped. And that has complicated matters, like Shane mentioned, with so many good teams in the Western Conference. If you want to include Nashville in that, well, the gauntlet just gets that much more difficult.
Man, that playoff bracket is going to be hard to predict when you look at the West. It is.
And a lot of disappointed teams after one round, like Stanley Cup contenders out in round one for sure in the Western Conference.
The Red Wings fighting today at practice, as you mentioned. Maybe that's the spark they needed. They're on a 6-game losing streak, and they were one of the most exciting stories. I mean, at the beginning of the year, we go, who's the team to watch this year? Is it Buffalo? Is it Ottawa? Or is it Detroit? And it felt like, okay, all three will always be your exciting pick, but Detroit really showed a lot of promise. But a 6-game losing streak, third wild card spot here behind the Islanders, who are doing something special, and then the Lightning, who are hanging on there. So we'll see if that fight in practice sparks something, but that's spicy.
Yeah, the Red Wings looked like world beaters about, what, 2 weeks ago? Mm-hmm. Patrick Kane was thriving, looked like, oh, it's Patrick Kane. And no worries about where he's going in his career. He's still the same old guy. He looks unbelievable with Alex DeBrincat, but 6 losses in a row have come somewhat surprisingly. And yeah, they're out of a playoff position right now. Buffalo Sabres coming on, but I think the team that they're going to be looking at is the New York Islanders, as you mentioned, who are really, really playing well right now, and Patrick Waugh's got them cooking just as good from an underlying perspective as a team like Nashville, who's had all this success over the last couple of weeks.
Okay, we'll take a quick break, but I want to read a couple of these home run jacket suggestions. 590-590 is our text line. You can send it in there anytime. Lots of love for an RCMP hat or coat or both.
Okay.
Obviously, that's a pretty Canadian look. Some people saying that they should use, I don't know, like a beer bong, you know what that is?
Oh, that's like I know. I think Shane O'Brien knows what it is as well.
He might. That's a pretty popular suggestion, very Canadian. Lots of love for the moose antlers. We're getting a raccoon hat. We're getting a lumberjack jacket, so like the buffalo plaid. That could be a good one. Very Canadian look. A cool Canada Day-themed hat. Not sure what that one is, but there is a lot to go through here. Something Blue Jays bird related. I don't know what that would be. Something like, how would you make a Blue Jays themed outfit?
What about one? Just like you're the retro queen. Just like something retro, like the first days of the Blue Jays. Something like that, like a starter, not the starter jacket, but something retro.
How about this
that
one?
Is still Blue Jays.
A vintage Blue Jays jean jacket, half of the Canadian tuxedo. That's our thing.
You might be onto that.
We're onto something there.
You'd have to find it in the closet, though, just like the
home
run
jack. I'm
sure
somebody's holding on to it. How about the Jays wear the Jason hockey mask, the killer mentality?
Mm.
A couple things about hockey. I do believe that it's Detroit that uses the hockey helmet.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's okay. We could steal something of that sort. But keep those coming. 590, 590. We're going to take a quick break. Alana Rizzo is going to join us on the other side. Lots to go through. Blue Jays and Joey Votto. Haven't got your thoughts on that yet. Vlad back in the lineup. And Gerrit Cole injury, how that might change what the Yankees do in the foreseeable future. There's still a couple people out there that they could capture if the price is right. And then we'll talk a little golf to wrap up our show. That's all next on the Fan Pregame.
Big guests and bigger opinions on everything happening in Leafsland. Real Kipper and Bourne. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We're back on the Fan Pregame, Sportsnet and Sportsnet 590, The Fan. We're almost 2 weeks away from opening day.
Yeah, March 28th
is crazy.
Rapidly approaching.
It is. Blue Jays have some big decisions to figure out. Maybe what happens to Joey Votto if he makes this roster. I haven't heard your thoughts on Joey Votto.
I haven't heard yours.
Well, we'll have to wait.
They may be contrasting.
Let's ask our actual... Well, you think they're going to be...
I don't know. They might not contrast.
But because I like fun and you don't.
I know you like it without asking.
I don't know. That's
really.
True. I might be more of a realist than you think.
All right.
Let's ask.
I will make it up.
Our next guest, Alana Rizzo, High Heat on MLB Network with Chris Rizzo. How's it going, Alana? Appreciate you jumping on.
You guys are crazy. They better sign Joey Votto to a long-term deal.
You think
he is long-term?
Okay, maybe not long term, but definitely major league deal from minor league deal. This man is a two nation treasure. How dare you speak ill of Joey Votto? No, I'm kidding. But I love him. I love what he's made of himself as a player. Obviously, he's a longtime Cincinnati Red. I think if you figure if every time Joey Votto got a walk, if you turn that into a hit, he'd be in the Hall of Fame. Mm-hmm. I mean, just the patience at the plate, the veteran presence that he brings. Obviously, a great clubhouse guy. I mean, do they necessarily need Joey Votto to lengthen a lineup? Not sure, but I can tell you what, I think the veteran presence in that clubhouse could serve them very well.
Okay, so veteran presence, two-nation treasure, agree with all that. The walks might still come in handy. It's not necessarily something the Blue Jays have done particularly well, but, like, can he play still? Like, what is your read on that? Like, were you surprised that he didn't have a job, that he was going to social media, campaigning for a job, that the Blue Jays were his lifeline in a lot of ways? Like, can Joey Votto still play in your eyes? That's important, right?
Absolutely. I thought the same thing when Albert Pujols was designated for assignment by the Angels. That, to me, blew me away. And then he had a kind of a resurgence of an unbelievable year with the Los Angeles Dodgers, and then, you know, finishes his career as a Cardinal and, you know, is still in that realm and doing other things. I do think that there has to be some sort of, you know, value placed on a player for what he's done for the long haul. And I think Joey Votto still has enough in that bat and still has enough as far as, you know, what he can do at the plate to be a positive contributor to that team. I just, you know, I hate to see, I can't, I'm like, Albert Pujols is a future Hall of Famer. I mean, it just goes to show you anybody can get DFA'd, right? Mm-hmm. You know, I think there's a question mark as to whether or not Joey Votto is a Hall of Famer. But I still think that he can add some serious value to a team. And what a cool story. You know, I know it's a business. I know this isn't Disney World. But I do think it would be neat to see Joey Votto perhaps finish his career with the Blue Jays, obviously, as a Canadian. I think that would be great. But I'm not just saying that from a sentimental value. I do still think that Joey Votto can play.
And even if he can play, I still feel like he's the type of guy that is going to take this opportunity with the Blue Jays and say, all right, I gave it my all, but let me be involved in this organization. Let me try to find a place. Like, you know, he's a wealth of knowledge. He's a wealth of experience. And I don't find that he's the guy that's going to walk away from the game. Maybe he'll get a media career, but don't you think that Joey's the type of guy that's going to want to sink his teeth into Canada's team, the team in his backyard, the team that he posted a photo of him wearing a bib growing up loving? Like, I don't think this is the last of Joey and the Blue Jays, even if he doesn't make the roster.
Well, I think he's also smart in saying that he's looking forward to being able to have the chance to work his way back to the major league level. I mean, Joey Votto isn't taking anything for granted. He's not making the assumption that he's going to be on the big league roster. He's not making the assumption that he's going to be on an open day roster. Now, is Joey Votto going to, you know, take a AAA assignment while they figure things out? Probably not. He doesn't need to do that. I mean, he's definitely established himself as one of the best players to have played the game, but you know what? I like the fact that he's not ready to quit. I don't, you know, he's saying, you know what? You're going to have to rip this jersey off of me. I would love it to be a Toronto Blue Jays jersey. You know, we'll see. It kind of breaks my heart a little bit that he had to go to social media. I think he's unbelievably funny. I love the way, you know, the approach that he's taking, but I think the Blue Jays would be well served. You know, if it makes sense, obviously, to be well served to have Joey Votto on their big league roster.
Okay, so let's say they install Joey Votto on the roster, and like the fit's not perfect, but that's, let's set that aside for a second. Votto, Justin Turner, Donnie Baseball, bigger role in terms of the offense and offensive strategy. But it all comes down to Vladimir Guerrero Jr., right, for this team? Like, is it too simplistic, to just say, hey, if Vladdy Guerrero Jr. has a great season, the Blue Jays can be great?
Well, Justin, I think that we're running out of time with the fact that Vladdy and, you know, Bichette are together. I mean, they're 2 years away from free agency, right? I mean, they've done what they can do with these guys as far as a tandem being together. I mean, their window is closing as far as contention for the Blue Jays with these two guys. I mean, you had Vladimir Guerrero Jr. last year, 26 home runs, 94 RBI in 23. You know, that's not exactly, I mean, they're impressive numbers, certainly, but that's not the type of year he wanted to have. And Bo Bichette, you know, had a good year, 306 batting average, 20 long balls, 73 RBI, but they're 2 years away from free agency. So if not now, when? And I do like the fact that they, you know, obviously re-signed outfielder Kevin Kiermaier, third baseman Justin Turner. I don't think you guys understand, I'm not trying to be condescending when I say this, but Justin Turner, he is also that unbelievable veteran presence that you're going to need in a clubhouse. I had the opportunity to cover JT with the Dodgers for 7 seasons, and in fact, we both became Dodgers, if you will, on the same day. He was a non-roster invitee back in 2014 when I was starting to cover the Dodgers, and then he ended up making that opening day roster in 2014. And this is a guy, I realize there's not captains in baseball unless you're the Yankees, and that's not always the case either with them. But Justin Turner is the glue that keeps a team together. And I understand he's going to be 40 years old in November, but this is a guy coming off of career high in hits. He's coming off a career high in RBI last year with the Boston Red Sox. I'm amazed that they didn't find a way to keep him signed in Boston. But that is a guy that he is really going to have a positive impact on the Blue Jays. So you have him, you have Kiermaier, as we just discussed, you have IKF. You know, they have the veteran pieces, but you have to make sure that you get the most that you can out of Bichette and out of Guerrero Jr. because, again, that window is closing. So I love their outfield defense. They have Kiermaier, they have Dalton Varsho. Even if George Springer, you know, has slowed a little bit, I like, they have the pieces in place. But this is a core that's been together for a number of years, but they're 3-14 in the playoffs. I don't need to tell you guys that. You cover this team all the time, dating back to 2015. I think, you know, everyone's like, okay, oh my gosh, are they going to get Shohei Ohtani? And then when that didn't happen, it kind of felt like a letdown. But I still like this team. I like the core of this team. I like Schneider. I like this team a lot. And I do think that if Bichette and Guerrero can have the year together that we know that they can, and if the pitching can hold up, I think this team can go really far.
I mean, that's what we were kind of sold as well once Shohei Ohtani wasn't added to this roster, was a lot of internal improvement. I think they have the right people to do the internal improvement, and there's room for it. They sound like they're adding the right veteran voices, whether Joey Votto is on the roster or not. Justin Turner, we hear a lot of great things about him as well. So they have the skeleton. They just got to bulk that up. We're talking to Alana Rizzo of MLB High Heat. I want to ask you about Gerrit Cole now, because this is related to us in a sense. Of course, the Yankees and the Blue Jays will see each other a lot. The injury, about 1 to 2 months, we're hearing at this point. I wonder if this is going to trigger a reaction from the Yankees to strengthen in the short term, to go out and grab somebody to try to bridge this gap when Gerrit Cole won't be available to pitch for them.
You know, it's funny that you say that. I guess, I mean, everyone's kind of thinking the same thing. I mean, he's coming off an AL Cy Young Award. You know, he's a definite ace, a definitive ace. You know, you pretty much can pencil in a W every fifth day. And I think the Yankees are so much stronger going into 2024 than they were in 2023. But then who replaces him for 2 months? Is it finally going to be a deal where the White Sox finally let go of Dylan Cease? And everyone's like, what about Blake Snell? Well, Blake Snell hasn't faced any. I mean, I understand he's obviously the Boris Corp has the facilities, but he's still not facing live hitters in a game time situation. So you could argue that Blake Snell isn't going to be ready for a month to two because he hasn't had a spring training like all of these other players have had a spring training. So what do you do here? I mean, you're going to have to give up a lot to get Dylan Cease from the Chicago White Sox, but the Yankees are going to have to do something. Now, you know, the fact that they didn't get Yamamoto was a bummer to them, I'm sure. He wanted to play in Los Angeles. He said he wanted to play with Shohei. But they did upgrade their rotation. They signed free agent right-hander Marcus Stroman. I mean, is he Garrett Cole? No. But they still have to have a better season from left-hander Carlos Rodon and Nestor Cortez. If those guys can have the strong seasons that we expect from them to have, I think that they're going to be able to weather this Garrett Cole 1 to 2 month storm okay. Now, they could very easily out-hit any sort of underperforming pitching that they have, because if you think about this lineup now with the addition, of course, of Juan Soto, I mean, that is a pretty great lineup. When you think about Aaron Judge, obviously, Juan Soto, Giancarlo Stanton, who came into spring training looking, you know, they always joke, I'm in the best, best shape of my life. I think he actually is in the best shape of his life this year. So they have those three guns. And then, by the way, if they can have a rebounding performance from Anthony Rizzo, DJ LeMahieu, again, Giancarlo Stanton, there's firepower in the lineup if that trio bounces back, that they could kind of weather that. I mean, this is a team built for the postseason, right? They're going to get to the postseason in all likelihood. If they can weather the first 2 months and piece it together and figure it out, I think that they're certainly better this year than they were last year.
Yeah, I think that's the scary thing if you're the Blue Jays would be, okay, you're looking at the Yankees, you're in direct competition with the Yankees. If they lose Garrett Cole, that's, you know, on the surface, probably an advantage for the Toronto Blue Jays. But if they go out and get Dylan Cease, then they add Garrett Cole to that rotation, and all of a sudden they've fixed, you know, the short-term problem with the acquisition, and now they have both for the long-term, and that might be a scary thing with all that firepower, as you mentioned, to back it up. What's going on here with Blake Snell and Jordan Montgomery? Like, do they lose money every single day that this passes? Because you're right, they're not ready, and if they're not ready, well, then they can't justify the contract, which is what they're waiting on. It just feels like at some point, something's got to change here.
You know, it's funny because I can see both sides of the equation. When you think about the fact that fans are clamoring for a free agency clock, shot clock, I can see why fans want to do that. You know, like the NBA does it where you have to sign in a certain amount of time. I get that because it would be better for the sport in all likelihood. But I can also see it from a player and an agent standpoint, where it's like if you're forcing guys to make decisions perhaps more quickly than they would like to, or getting deals that they don't want, then you're forcing their salaries down and forcing their value down. So I can see both sides of the equation. I think Blake Snell is asking for too much personally. I mean, he obviously has a Cy Young Award in both leagues, and those 2 years obviously were incredibly impressive. However, if you look at the other years that were not Cy Young Award years, they're not that unbelievable. Now, that being said, he is obviously a very formidable pitcher, but I don't know that it warrants the money that, you know, that starting two that he's looking for. How Jordan Montgomery is not signed is beyond me. Mm. How the Texas Rangers, who I'm very much questioning their starting rotation, how the Texas Rangers have not re-signed him to a longer-term deal blows my mind. He arguably was one of the best pitchers in the postseason last year, and they need pitching. You know, they don't have, obviously, DeGrom until, you know, a certain point of the season. They need starting pitching, and it just surprises me that Jordan – I would have loved – I cover the Dodgers for 7 seasons. I would have loved to have seen Jordan Montgomery with the Los Angeles Dodgers. So the fact that, you know, he's not back in Texas really does surprise me. And, again, every single day that goes by is a day that they're not ready. It's a day they're not facing live hitters. It's a day that they're not, you know, throwing a bullpen that they would – want to throw a day before a start to actually be game ready. I mean, to me, that's going to that's going to hurt them. I think the only, you know, upside is, okay, maybe that their arm is a little bit more fresh when they do get signed. But if you think about the Rangers rotation, when the season opens, Nathan Eovaldi obviously is their ace. They hope to have Max Scherzer back, but he had back surgery, so they're not getting him until sometime over the summer. Otherwise, their rotation is John Gray, Dane Dunning, Andrew Heaney, and Cody Bradford. That's not a championship starting rotation. Again, they have the lineup that perhaps can out-hit the pitching woes, but to me, Jordan Montgomery should have been a Ranger already.
We're talking with Alana Rizzo about 2 weeks till opening day. I want to ask you about the Baltimore Orioles because they have been having a pretty incredible spring training, and I know sometimes you can get too ahead of yourself or get too down or too high on a team, but what they've been putting up and the amount of young talent they have, the amount of prospects they have, like it's pretty incredible the depth in that system. Have they been putting other teams on notice, or is there still the cautiousness when you approach spring training that this is just spring training?
I don't think so. I think the Orioles organization is kind of the envy of the industry. I mean, they have young, controllable assets all over the diamond, right? They have Adley Rutschman, of course. They have Jordan Westbrook, AL Rookie of the Year, Gunnar Henderson. They have Grayson Rodriguez in that starting rotation. And by the way, don't think for 1 second that Jackson Holliday is not going to see the major league level this year. I mean, he's the number one prospect in all of baseball. I covered his dad with the Rockies when Jackson was 3 years old running around the Rockies clubhouse, and he was already hitting bombs. And then I covered him when he was the first pick in the draft. I mean, that's how old I am. And that's like, this kid is so unbelievably special. But they have really good core pieces. And by the way, I thought that even before they signed Corbin Burns. Mm-hmm. I think that's a great sign for them. I mean, that kind of more than offsets the loss of Kyle Gibson, right? A 15-game winner in 2003. I mean, they have really good pieces in there. And they, you know, Felix Bautista is a big loss, but Cano's is a good back end of the bullpen guy. And then of course they have Craig Kimbrell, who has, you know, I he doesn't put the fear of God in me anymore, but he does have 417 career saves. So I just think that the Orioles have such a rich farm system, and you see what they can do based on what they did last year. And I don't think that, you know, winning the amount of games that they did was a fluke. You know, I think that they're definitely a team in the AL East to be reckoned with. There's a reason that they finished first.
Okay, so the Orioles are the standard, at least we expect, in the AL East right now, with the two teams that are chasing with question marks in Toronto and New York that we've talked about so far. So where does it leave the Rays and the Red Sox right now for you?
I'm really surprised that the Red Sox haven't done more. I feel like the Red Sox are running their franchise like they are, you know, the Brewers, like they are the Tampa Bay Rays. And that's actually an insult to the Rays because the Rays have done they've done a lot with very little for a long amount of time. You know, the Rays have expectations, of course, to win at least 90 games, and they've done that. I mean, last season was the fourth time, the last five full-length seasons, the Rays managed to defy the expectations and win 90 or more games. I mean, they had a great start, right? They came out to a 13-0 start, but they were very good. I mean, the thing about the Rays that scares me, or not scares me, but worries me, I should say, is their starting pitching really worries me now, because you think about the fact that Tyler Glasnow is no longer there. He went to L.A. Now, they're without a number of other starting pitchers. Shane McClanahan, he's going to miss the entire season after undergoing Tommy John surgery. Jeffrey Springs, the lefty, underwent the same procedure. I mean, he's a little bit ahead of where McClanahan is, but he's probably not going to be back until the second half of the season. And then Drew Rasmussen is probably out at least till the All-Star break. So that's a big question mark, in my opinion, as far as the Rays are concerned. You know, they have Zach Eflin. He's returning. He was 16-8 in 2023. But again, they're pitching, I don't know if it's deep enough to be able to get them to where they need to be. And as far as the Red Sox goes, I don't know what the heck they're doing, honestly. You know, they return Rafael Devers. They return Tristan Casas, who is really, really good as a rookie. That's two lefty run producers. And getting a full, healthy season out of Trevor Story, I think, is going to be huge for them. I don't think the Red Sox fans or organization realize how good Trevor Story is because they haven't had a healthy Trevor Story. And again, they signed free agent right-hander Lucas Giolito, right? But he's done for the year, probably. I mean, that stinks. It stinks for them. So, and Chris Sale is now with the Braves. So, I don't know what the Red Sox are doing, and I would not be surprised if they ended up, you know, in last place in the division. And that's exactly where they were last season, last place in the division. So, and third time in 4 years. So is it going to be the fourth time in 5 years that they finish in the basement of the AL East? It's just not the way that I'm used to the Red Sox being run. So we'll see what happens there.
Last one for you, Lana, and we definitely appreciate the time. I want to fast forward to about August. You said you covered the Dodgers for, I believe, 7 years, you mentioned. Dodgers doing what we expect them to do. They're great. They're awesome. They are the standard in the NL. They're running away with everything mid-August. Is it going to captivate the baseball world, or do you think the baseball world's going to be kind of disinterested in their brilliance if they can achieve that?
I think the Dodgers need to get past the first round of the postseason. I think the Dodgers are expected to get to the postseason. The Dodgers are expected to, you know, spend money. They're expected to field a winning baseball team every single year. If the Dodgers get to the postseason, it's like, well, no kidding. You're supposed to look at your payroll, look at the talent that you have. If they can't get past the first round, then it's a problem, right? I mean, this is a team, again, built for October, but there's more of an expectation there that they need to win a World Series. It's a disappointing season otherwise. So I have no doubt they're going to win the NL West again. But how deep can they go? And, you know, again, there's still a few question marks as far as the Dodgers starting rotation is concerned. You don't have Clayton until the second half of the season. Tyler Glasnow is, you know, their opening day starter for the Skull games, but, you know, he's coming off a season in which he's thrown more innings than ever before, but, you know, it's still shy of what your ace needs to be as far as innings that you're eating up. You have, of course, Bueller, but he's going to be a little bit delayed coming off of Tommy John surgery. You know, Yamamoto, of course, we know what the hype is there. And then you have some young kids, too, that you're still trying to get. What is Bobby Miller going to do for you? Those types of things. But apart from that, the fact that they moved Mookie to shortstop, again, Mookie Betts, you ask anybody in the game, Mookie Betts is the best all-around athlete in Major League Baseball, hands down, no questions asked. But I think it begs to question, why is Gavin Lux being moved to second? Is it something in terms of his arm? Is it something that, you know, the throws are not the way they're supposed to be? You know, did they not like what they saw in terms of his range and his arm strength? Obviously, you know, shortstop is a very demanding defensive position. So maybe there's more there that we're not understanding right now. So I always expect the Dodgers to go far, but you've seen that they've been booted in the last, you know, 2 years way earlier than people expected.
Didn't have Shohei though, so everything's different this time around. We appreciate your time today. About 2 weeks and a day until opening day. So lots to come and a full season ahead. We appreciate it, Alana, and we'll chat down the road. Thanks so much.
All right, guys. You take care.
Thanks so much. Alana Rizzo, High Heat on MLB Network. And, yeah, next Thursday, opening day. That's it.
Yeah, it's going to be exciting.
Fired up.
It's always a awesome day, opening day. I hate how there's generally, like, a little break. It's like you get so excited, and then there's a break, and then it's the weekend. But whatever. Opening day. Always awesome. Always a great day.
Okay, we have about two-ish minutes here to go through some best bets for tonight. I'm going with something that, I mean, history showing has been working really well, but I don't want to jinx it. Luka Doncic is going for his eighth consecutive triple-double. Not a triple-triple, a triple-double. Plus 140.
That's just your coffee order.
Yeah, that. No, oh God, that's disgusting. Triple double tonight, Luka. He's got seven in a row. This is his eighth. I mean, it's Luka.
I don't think that's a bad play. It seems like stuffing the stat sheet is what's working for Luka at the moment, and that probably will continue. I hope the winning continues for the Colorado Avalanche. I got them over the Vancouver Canucks tonight. Obviously, Vancouver dealing with some bad news. It is the second half of a back to back for the Avs, but I do think this like little resurgence, this bump, this energy that you get from a busy deadline will help them carry them through a big Western Conference road trip and swing through Western Canada. Excuse me. I think a team like the Avs will get up for this trip, and I don't think it's going to be any different tonight.
Quickly, the Raptors are in action tonight against the Pistons. The Raptors are plus 138 against the Pistons. I mean, Raps put up a really good fight against the defending champs. Pistons are not very good. Neither are the Raptors. However, plus 138, the Raptors showed a little bit of fight.
Yeah.
Well, maybe worth a sprinkle.
Plus money Raptors against the Pistons says a lot about where the Raptors season is, yeah. Unfortunately. Players Championship starts tomorrow. Mm-hmm. I like Sam Burns, 40-1. Four top tens in six starts this year. Would have been five if he didn't blow up Sunday at Bay Hill. Sam Burns, 40-1.
I'm going to a former champ in Justin Thomas, 22-1. He's looking good. He's hitting the ball well. I think a lot of people are on Justin Thomas this week. I'm also going to get on top of this bet, 22-1. We're going to have more golf talk this week. Welcome back, Justin. Nice and tanned and refreshed.
I specifically wore white.
Yeah, and I'm very upset about it. Have a good night, everyone.